production for public broadcasting.
Well, good morning. Welcome to the Sustainable Living Program. John Butts is here. He's here every other Monday on WMNF 88.5 FM, Trading Places with Eve Prang Plues, and John is back.
Hey,
good
Rob.
Good morning. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. Pretty good. Out over the weekend enjoying the weather?
I was. I spent most of the weekend outdoors. How about you?
Yeah.
You have
to. It happens on the farm. Now, it's cooled down a little bit, and I'm just amazed like how things are kind of taking off there in the garden. And today, we're finally going to do a gardening show. You know, I had one planned when the hurricanes came through, and we just kind of got shoved back about 2 months. But, of course, it's one of my favorite programs. And, of course, I want to first off thank all the wonderful people that made pledges to WMNF couple weeks ago, and we did so well. It was so much fun to at the end of the pledge drive to end it on time and know that we've filled up the cash register so we can keep the boat afloat for another 4 months.
Yeah, now we're good to go for 4 months. So great. All those folks came through, especially on your show and Eve's show. They really came through.
I know it. Eve is something else, isn't she? Bless her. Hey, Rob, what's up at 11?
Well, we're going to hear Florida this week, and then we're going to recap that controversy involving the White House Chief of Staff John Kelly and South Florida Congresswoman Frederica Wilson. That controversy is still going on, and they're still trading shots this morning, and Wilson's getting death threats, so we'll talk about it.
Cool. Well, you know what Sean's got coming up at noon? Or
He's going to email us in just a second.
Okay. Make a quick announcement. As I said, on today's program, we're going to be doing a gardening show, and right now might be the best time to plant something because of the cooler, drier weather. Hopefully, it'll continue. True, a lot of our listeners, probably this isn't on the top of the to-do list, but I just wanted to make a couple of comments about that. First off is, you know, most of the food we eat is for-profit food, which is like other for-profit business. This is probably how profitable these food products are, not usually how healthy they are. And it's something I always kind of felt that most of us really can't afford healthy food, nor do we really want to pay that much for healthy food. But, I guess my last point was soon, I think, that we all may have to contribute to our own production of food or maybe starve, which I guess is kind of strong for a Monday morning. But, you know, I think all of us firsthand kind of saw what happened at when the hurricane came through. And we go to the grocery store and you go, well, gee whiz, where's all this and where's all that? And I don't know. Like I said, I think it's something, you know, gardening is like a lot of stuff that we cover here on the Sustainable Living Show. It's a very important issue, and we really have to have some knowledge about it. And food certainly is one of those issues that we should have some knowledge, even though we may not, you know, be active in it all the time. Our guests on today's program are Mr. Greensome himself. Mr. Thumb has experience in urban horticulture working with the Pinellas County Extension Service and has taught horticulture at the St. Petersburg College. Stan has spread his gardening know-how on radio, TV, television columns, both in the Clearwater Sun and Tampa Tribune. Welcome to WMNF, Stan DeFreitas. Great to have you, Stan.
Well, I'm glad to be here, and I've been in this business, as you have, forever in a day. I was born in St. Petersburg at Mountain Park, and so the rest of my life I've been in horticulture. I spent 8 years with the Extension Service, started the first community garden project in St. Pete, and started the first master gardener program in Pinellas. So it's kind of in my blood, and I enjoy preaching about gardening, and I love gardening, and I just planted some broccoli and cabbage and cauliflower and all those other good things in my own backyard yesterday. Had some back surgery done about a year and a half ago, so my movement's bad, so I had to take a chair and move it from one box to another box to another box. But, you know, if you love doing this business, then even if you don't move as well as you used to, you still try to do what you can with what you can.
Stan, you're probably the dean of gardeners around here. You are probably one of the most prominent people in gardening in all the Tampa Bay area.
Thanks. I appreciate that. We did write a gardening book, which we sold 300,000 copies, which puts us number 10 in gardening book history. I don't know where the money is, but it's in my kids' teeth and in, you know, shoes and going to the university type thing. But I've enjoyed horticulture, and we're still working on stuff. My son and I are working on a TV show right now, so it's going to be my son and I both on camera, and though he'll also be the director, we're working on something we're hoping is going to be on national PBS, and we'll see. I say that, and they've given us a lot of green lights, but you know, we're shooting stuff now, so we'll get it somewhere.
Mm-hmm. What is it, Florida Gardening?
Did Florida Gardening show for years?
Well, the book, the name
the book is called Stan DeFreitas' Complete Guide to Florida Gardening.
Okay. And, you know, it's funny because when we talked, I said, well, you know, I have that book. And I got to looking for it. I can't find it. It's kind of disappeared.
You must have given it away to someone let someone borrow it.
Yeah, somebody stole it.
They stole your book. So if one's out there listening, return John's book to him now. You see, we have ways of finding you. We're going to be out there.
It's really an honor to have you, Stan. And also joining us is my partner, Debbie Butts, and she's also has work experience with Extension here in Hillsborough County. Stan's in Pinellas County. And also she's worked on our environmental lands program here in Hillsborough County. And also I think she was one of the first master gardeners in Hillsborough County. And of course she's been involved with a lifelong involvement with the Florida Native Plant Society here locally. And she's was, I think, a couple of terms as the president of the state chapter. So she's very, I'm very lucky to have somebody with that kind of knowledge, right, Rob?
You are very lucky, John.
You're very lucky to have a life partner that can help you in so many different ways.
That you enjoy the same things.
Yeah,
we certainly sort of. Not as much anymore.
Welcome, and thanks so much, Debbie, for coming in. So Stan, you planted some broccoli, cabbage. What did you say? Where is?
I'll be like George Bush. Don't like broccoli. Points of flat. Don't want it. No, I'm also an imitator too. So I'll throw some of those things in on occasion. But I love broccoli. It pains my heart to go to Publix and spend, you know, $3 or $4 for a head of broccoli. So I'm also tight. Mm-hmm. I also know what you're doing. I don't spray my veggies. If there's a little, my son asked me, there's a little hole in one of the little cabbage leaves. And I said, you know, in Europe, they would look forward to finding the cabbage that had a little hole in the leaf because, you know, there's nothing, it's not going to be glowing in the dark.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things we did in this country is we created all these great chemicals. And then we say, well, we can't use them here. But we sell them all around the rest of the world where a lot of our veggies that come in that look so pretty, we don't know what they've done and when they've done it last. So that's another reason to grow your own.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you use transplants? Did you grow your transplants?
This time I kind of went to Willow Tree Nursery and said, Dennis, you're doing a great job. And I took a lot of little, you know, if you're going to grow four tomatoes or something, it's easier to go get a four-pack or a six-pack. Mm-hmm. And I used to. I remember when I worked with Extension Service, I would have rows and rows of seedlings. Mm-hmm. That I'd go out and hear, you know, we're answering the phone, and I'd have a tie on, and I'd be out there puttering with stuff that we would bring down to the community gardens and give away to a lot of folks. Mm-hmm. But today, you know, I must say, especially with a back problem, too, it's harder for me to bend over. So if I can just go say, hey, you know, Dennis, you did a great job, and he bought it from some other wholesaler. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you're getting a little 2-inch or 3-inch plant, you've got it past that critical stage that it's tough for a lot of homeowners. Now, maybe not for you and your wife because you do it all the time. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if a little seedling dries, it dies.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And you know that, but the average person out there doing their first garden, they don't, and so they have problems sometimes. Mm-hmm.
So what would you look for when you look for a transplant? I mean, is there variety problems, or does, you know, most of, like if you go to Lowe's, are you going to get something that's going to grow? Yeah. How do you know that?
Well, yeah, and that's the reason I tend to go to more mom-and-pop nurseries, okay. And I'm not picking on the big-box stores, but I like to go to a store, like as I mentioned, Dennis at Willow Tree, his sister, and he run the place, so it's a mom-and-pop-type place, mm-hmm. and his brother, it's a family run. His son works there. His wife used to work there. And I just like that. I mean, I was in one of the big box stores the other day, and I asked somebody about something, and the guy shrugged at me, and I was kind of motioning with my arm, saying, "Hey, come here, I want to ask you a question about something." And the guy said, he turned around and walked the other way. And I said, he said, "I'm practicing for my next job, too." So, I mean, I looked at the guy and said, "I'm going to make you an offer you can't refuse. So come back here and see me, or Luca Brasi will be come visiting you." And, you know, he did come back after that. But that's one of my problems in some of the box stores. And sometimes the guys worked over in lighting or hardware or somewhere else. Yeah. And they don't always... I've been in there before where I had to keep my mouth shut because they're giving out sometimes wrong information. In fact, well, then I don't. I go, "Look, that what he just told you is totally wrong. Let me tell you what's what's right." And I said, and I hate to be a Budinsky, but I hate really bad information going out, and sometimes you hear it.
Mm-hmm. So, Debbie, what can we be planning right now?
Oh, a lot of stuff. If you don't already have your tomato seeds in, it's too late, so get transplants because it's getting up there now, and we've got them blooming and starting to get little fruit on them. A lot of stuff you can plant still now, though, like your kales, collards, carrots, probably beets, just about anything, maybe even spinach. I think John's got some spinach growing now.
Mm-hmm. And it's actually coming out and looking yellow. Not looking yellow yet.
Yeah. Yay.
It's very... I couldn't help but overhear Rob while I was here a couple weeks ago talking to somebody, and they were asking Rob about his gardening. And he goes, "Well, you know, I just haven't had enough time."
Squirrels.
Well, squirrels eat the macadamias. Yeah. Caterpillars eat the tomatoes. Yeah. So Stan, what's the best way to do it? What's the best way for the ground? Do you do a raised bed? Is that the best way to garden around here in Florida?
Yes, I agree with all the above. I use raised beds, and my neighbor does too. I use a lot of raised boxes, and I think for the small homeowner thing, that's a good system because you're up off the ground, and we do have things like nematodes and fungi and bacteria and weed seeds. And I always say, you know, other than that, it's trouble free. But you know, if you can get to a really good soil, I mean, I had bought a big bag of soil the other day. You know, if you're like John here and his wife, you can improve your soil with cow manure and stuff. And if they're lucky enough to have their own cows, I don't in the city. So, you know, I go to Black Cow Manure and I buy a couple of bags of that the other day and added that in with the soil. And I really try to make a nice strong mix. I try to think, what can I do as a homeowner that I could get as close to what John and his wife are doing in their yard or their home. And, you know, they've got more or less a mini commercial thing going, so you can really improve the soil if you've got your own cow. Mm. And you can actually see the soil start to turn black. And, you know, we use our native soil. We use the term soil pretty loosely. It's basically silicon sand. So it doesn't hold much. And I always joke, if you put a ton of fertilizer right there, you know, the Chinese are getting a bumper crop of rice because it's going straight through.
Straight through.
So improving the soil, holding the soil, you know, save those. I went out yesterday, egg shells and some stuff we had peeled. I'd help my wife, you know, make cucumber peelings and lettuce and carrots and all that stuff. To me, the solution to pollution is dilution, and that's putting it back, digging it back into your own yard and garden. And that's what I did yesterday. I went back by my carambola tree, and I've got a carambola, and I'm avocado, and a navel, and a lemon, and a lime. You know, my wife says, you know, you'd have the Garden of Eden here if you could. And she's right. I would have, if I could, every square foot would be something you could eat. That would drive my neighbors probably totally bonkers, because I live in the city, but I like that concept. I mean, I've got lemongrass, and I'm growing my veggies, and as far as I'm concerned, I mean, all my neighbors love my avocados. I mean, I must have had, you know, 50 of them, and I had neighbors going, "Hey, we're making some guacamole this weekend. You mind if we get 5 of them?" And I go, "No, that's fine." You know,
we're going to take some phone calls. Our phone number is 813-239-3. 9663. And you can send your question in via email to dj at wmnf.org. You're listening to the Sustainable Living Program. John Butts is here, Debbie Butts is here, and their special guest, Stan DeFreitas, who is one of the top gardeners here in the Tampa Bay area. So when you say boxes, are these boxes up on like a sawhorse, or what are these boxes up on?
I should put them up there with my back. That would be that would be a great idea. I just have them up with a couple little bricks underneath to get them up off the ground. And I'm actually using some earth boxes, but give them a plug, though I'm not really being paid by them. But in a different life, I used to be, so I must say that there was a relationship at one point with us. And I like the idea. I've got eight of them going right now, and they're easy to fill up. They've got a filler tube, so you can make sure you have enough water. I think that's it's recycled plastic, so that's a great idea. And, you know, if you can't really take the time and improve your soil like John and Debbie have done, then building some kind of box, and my neighbor's done it with wood, and he has one that's up, you know, a couple of feet high. You don't have to go out and buy one. You can certainly make it. Years ago, we had a big recycling bin that they decided they didn't want to use anymore. They were going to went to ones with wheels. So I recycled that and put a drain pipe into it, made my own little earth box out of a recycling box.
How do you know in the box whether the drainage is right at the bottom?
Well, I'd make sure you have some holes in there.
Yeah, but how many holes, for instance?
I've got four holes in the one.
Yeah. Just kind of the size of a screw hole?
Either that or the one for the earth box actually has one that's probably a maybe quarter-inch hole that's built into the box.
Uh-huh.
So they thought about that. I mean, one of the reasons they made the box is that the inventor, who is, I think, still with us, Blake, got flooded. And he was a commercial tomato farmer, and he lost most of his crop, and it was too much water. And so he decided to build a box so that he would have perfect drainage. So even if he had a deluge, and he's such a great, great guy, he's worth spending some time, if you go down there sometime, just to see the earth box. And if he still gives the talk, he is just he comes alive, even though he's gotten older and age has caught him somewhat, like it has us all. He's just a great guy to go spend some time with.
In terms of placing the box, sun, where's the best place in your backyard? How much sun should that box get per day?
Well, remember, tomatoes and potatoes and peppers are all in the Solanaceae family, so they're sun lovers, and they have to have at least 6 hours of sun a day. One of the reasons I got into gardening is my father was a New York City boy. And he came down here and he thought, well, you know, he stick something in the ground. He stuck it on the north side of the house, total shade, and his little tomatoes came up and withered and died. And as I went through hort school and stuff, I thought, I wonder what Pop did everything about as wrong as you could have done. Now, you know, now he was great if he wanted to bake a pie or wanted to make stuff. He had his place that was he was great at, but he didn't really learn much about gardening. He just figured you went out in the backyard, got some old oil cans, stuck some sand in there, and had horrible results. Made me later in life decide, you know, this organic stuff's kind of important. And if you don't have at least 10% organic matter, you're going to probably, you won't keep the earthworms alive. You need at least 10% or more. So that's important. And if you start seeing earthworms in your soil, you go, we've started to hit a critical mass here where we're doing something right. And I'm sure you guys have that.
Mm-hmm. You know, my neighbor's got a big commercial, and they're going, we're almost to 2% organic matter.
Oh, my.
And so but some of them are worse than that. I mean, most of us, you know, I've noticed over the years that less and less of them plant a cover crop.
Yeah, it's amazing. Debbie and I were talking about that earlier.
They just come in, they save the plastic, they spray with herbicide, and then they replant. I'm thinking, how long can this go on?
Yeah, it doesn't sound like really a sustainable situation. So bless you for your work in trying to make things more sustainable. And people may be thinking outside of the, you know, it always has to be plastic.
Well, John and Stan, you should tell us what a cover crop is for folks that are new to gardening down here. Why is it important, and what is a cover crop?
Well, you know, there's a lot of reasons for having a cover crop, but a cover crop is like that dormant time that your field would be in. And I would imagine in the old days, they just let what was there grow. But a lot of times a cover crop will actually shade out weeds. Mm-hmm. It'll and then adds organic matter to the the soil. And, you know, like they've gotten real good with kind of examining different kinds of, if you have a nematode problem, they recommend a certain thing. If you have a deficiency of organic matter, you would add, like, say, Sudan sorghum instead of a smaller one. You know, mm-hmm. the sun hemp now is really good, and I think it has a lot of properties to help with nematodes. And it's real fast. I'm assuming it's a C4 plant or one of those that has the four carbon atoms in it, and they just grow like weeds. And within 5 weeks, they grow it, and the daggum stuff's 6 feet tall, and they don't fertilize. Usually, they never fertilize a cover crop, so what you see is what you get.
You might explain to a cover crop normally is going to be turned back into the ground.
Yep.
And some of them are nitrogen fixers, so they'll tuck nitrogen out of the air, and that's kind of a good thing. And, of course, anytime you've got plants and trees, you're taking in carbon, and those are good things to do since we're putting so much carbon monoxide and dioxide out into the world. Every time you can put more green out there, you're doing more, and you're also covering the ground. You're holding the ground, and you're recycling into your ground, and you're making for the good earth, which, you know, is just a tremendous happening.
And you know, people come out and they look at our garden and they go, "Good God, it's got weeds growing between the rows." You know, in the row, and we. Luckily, now we have these things called electric weed eaters with batteries, and you can go out there with a weed eater and keep that stuff, but. Our theory was always that anything was better than bare ground.
Sure.
You know, as long as you have something growing there, at least there was, something going on with nature and all that. But we always have a lot of trouble because people want to take the weeds and take them out of the garden. I'm thinking, well, just leave them there. You know, you don't have to bring the organic matter in.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Well, some of them are delicious, too. Like the purslane right now is more... It's more nutritious than what we're trying to grow. Mm-hmm. And the same with lamb's quarters is another plant that comes up in just a few months more. And that's what we should be eating, not trying to grow all these, what I call European vegetables and stuff.
You should be bringing those to market, selling your purslane.
Debbie, do you eat Spanish needle by any chance?
It's
everywhere.
Some people eat more of it than I do, but it's also medicinal. We had a person come to the Native Plant Society one time, and the only thing she brought was a food processor and an entire plant of Biden's, which is the Spanish needle. And she ground up the entire thing and put it in some like vodka as the alcohol part. And she says it's antibiotic, antifungal, antiviral, everything. And you're not going to build an immunity against it.
Mm-hmm. And a good time was had by all.
Yeah, right. The vodka really helped.
But the young leaves are quite tasty. You don't want to get the big old things, but you can make good salsa and all kinds of things out of them.
Uh-huh. So Ron writes this question, Stan, did you write an article for a small garden that used new cat litter and other stuff as a soil amendment?
Well, you certainly could use the cat litter as a soil, anything that loosens the soil is going to be helpful. I don't remember, but I may have. I've written thousands of things over the years, and anything that improves the texture of the soil, loosens it up, is a good thing, in my opinion.
I think that was John Starnes.
Could be.
Probably wrote that. It sounds like something he...
Could be. I know I've used the kitty litter before. I mean, I've had cats and I lost cats. And I don't have a cat right now. So when I had stuff, I thought, well, what do I do with the rest of this kitty litter? And part of it we recycled into the garden.
So, Stan, what advice do you have for folks that have citrus trees? Have you given up on citrus?
I still have citrus. I have a navel and I've got a lime. And
are they resistant to greening?
I've not had any signs of greening on mine, but I'm not in a grove where I'm next to other people. You know, many times when we monoculture something and we do get a problem, it tends to go through it because, you know, the little insect goes from one to one to one to one to one. And I'm a certified pest control operator, but I this week I'm going down to inject some palms with oxytetracycline. The problem is with a palm, you have to do it about every 3 or 4 months because once this bacterial-like disease gets in there, it doesn't stop. We can kind of stop it to a point, But, you know, some people will spend $8,000 or $9,000, $10,000 on per palm.
Oh, yeah.
And that's pretty expensive if they lose them.
Are all palms susceptible to this?
No. But the big Phoenix canariensis and the dactylifer, which is the true date, and varieties of that, medjool, they are. And those are some of the most expensive palms. And in fact, so it's important to find out. Often I've taken samples and sent them off to Gainesville, the University of Florida, where they'll use electron microscopes to prove that this kind of, it's a viral-like disease. It's not really a virus. It's not really a bacteria. It's sort of a mycoplasm that gets into the palms. And it shuts down those. If you cut a palm down, it has a bunch of vascular bundles. It's like straws. And those straws get infected, and the palm just dies. And it's a shame. So that's one of the jobs that I have done. I go out and, you know, give them a lollipop, and I inject it and put a port in the tree, and it stays there. And and I, it's also part of the way I keep my, you know, keep the energy people paid, and until I figure out a way to put on some solar, which we were talking about earlier, which is something else I want to do in the next year.
We had some people call a few months ago, John, who said that they kept their citrus in the shade of a large oak, and so far the citrus hasn't had greening, but maybe that goes to your point, Stan, that it's not part of a large grove, it's just a single citrus tree.
I don't think the other insect hasn't gotten to something that's infected and infected them. And so you're kind of blessed in a way if you've got that little backyard citrus that's away from everyone else. I think your odds are less that you're going to get that disease.
And I think the point that they were making was the mycelium in the ground around the oak tree, and the, you know, what was going on in the soil was actually beneficial to the citrus tree. And, you know, it's funny, this year it looks like a few of ours are actually looking better, and that's it's kind of positive.
So you don't have much greening on your farm?
Well, we have a lot. I don't, you know, there's a lot of.
Did
groves.
You cut down any trees?
Well, they died, and we pulled them out. Matter of fact, we just pulled out a kumquat the other day.
Because I've seen a lot of groves where the citrus is stunted, but it's still growing. It still puts out new leaves every year. It still puts out fruit every year, but the fruit never is any good. But I wonder, you know, do those trees ever come back if they've already been stunted by the green?
I don't think really, you know, IFAS is recommending closer spacing and just planning on a shorter lifespan for the citrus tree. And, you know, apparently peaches haven't, you know, they've tried peaches in our area, and they haven't really done well, and I guess we're kind of struggling on.
I tried to grow a couple peaches years ago at my other house in Clearwater, and I got, you know, 15-foot tall trees, and the blooms were beautiful, and I got some fruit. But I must say the squirrels used to sit up there and just aggravate my dogs. They would spit, you know, throw the pits down on them or something, and it was never really. It's just like a Georgia peach, but I did get some peaches, and I enjoyed trying to grow them. But I've grown figs and bananas. I'm growing some of those right now. They're doing well.
We got to ask you how you're doing that. Our phone number is 813-239-9663, and our email address is dj@wmnf.org. We're talking about gardening here on the Sustainable Living Program.
You know, it's kind of, I'm kind of looking at the phone lines, and I'm thinking, Stan did say avocado, and we always get these calls on avocados. You know, people get a seed, and they put the seed and put the toothpicks in it and put it next to the sink, and it roots, and this beautiful plant starts growing, and they plant it in the ground, and after about 10 years, they're scratching their head going, well, where's the fruit? Where's the fruit?
Well, they should get fruit even from a seedling after 10 years. Now, you can graft them, and I have a little demonstration that you can look in my book, Stand to Fruit. This is a complete guide to Florida gardening. Shameless plug number one. But and then we talk a little bit about how to do a side graft and a little cleft graft. And so it's you can do it. And you know, if you get the variety, let's say you go to your neighbors and you just love their tree, you only need a couple inches of wood, and that scion you can graft onto your little seedling that you raised, and you can get fruit in 3 or 4 years. Now, I put an avocado in about 3 years ago at my house, and it's now, it was about that high, maybe 4 or 5 feet, and it's now about 25 feet. So, but I've been pushing it a little bit with fertilizer and things, and I use some phosphite, which I think is not phosphorus, but it's a product that I got out of Sarasota. One of my buddies down there has been working with avocados and trying to help push them commercially, and Jeff Hunter. And
do you need a male and female avocado?
No, an avocado has both a male and female on the same tree,
right.
And it opens up at different times, and that's called an A and a B flower, which is different because some varieties do. Papaya has male and female. And I have one male. I have three males that came up that my buddy John Herb gave me for some varieties. And they're all male, and none of them are producing. Now, up till now, I've always had some male or female on the same tree. And I was going to go out and cut them down. But I went out the other day, and there was, like, at near dusk, there was, like, 30 or 40 little hummingbirds. So I thought, well, I can't cut them down now because I saw my wife came out, Peg, and I said, look at this. See, we've got all these hummingbirds. We're feeding them. And, you know, from a technical standpoint, I should cut the trees down because I know I'm never going to get any fruit off these males. Mm-hmm. But the hummingbirds were so happy that I thought I can't be a bad guy. I've got to leave them.
They smell good.
And they do. Oh, lovely fragrance. Kind of like a gardenia or their second cousins of the frangipanis or plumerias. And except they give you something. They give you some fruit. They're not just snossages half the year.
We have this giant avocado here in the west parking lot of WMNF. And every year you see a few buds and you see a few blooms out there, but never do we get any fruit. No fruit ever sets. And I think, John, you've tried to, you've gone out there and tried to work your magic and brought other plant experts out there to work magic, but we've never gotten any fruit.
I'll have to give it my green thumb blessing before when I leave.
Stan DeFreitas is here, and Debbie Butts is here. John Butts is here, and this is the Sustainable Living Program. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Send in your question, too, via email. Here's our address, dj@wmnf.org.
You know, Debbie, we finally have a large avocado, and, of course, it didn't do well. It hasn't produced fruit, and the storm kind of blew it over. But what variety is that? What is variety important here in Florida?
Oh, yeah. In our area, I think the Winter Mexican or Brogdon do really well, and I sell those well at the market because they're smaller and more like the Haas that everybody likes that doesn't do as well here as it does in California.
Yep, so. I think that's important. Remember that there's two main strains, either the Winter Mexican or the Guatemalan. And the Guatemalan will give you this huge football-looking avocado, but they're not very coal hardy. And the Winter Mexican give you a very small, like the Haas, but they are coal hardy. So, I mean, they've got one variety called Gainesville that grows up in Gainesville. I have one in between. You know, it's fairly coal hardy, and yet I get a fairly good size fruit. So, there are all kind of varieties that you can raise. I mean, there's just like everything else. You were talking about some of the different kale varieties. And avocados, there's probably 25 or 30 common ones are in the area, and I bet there's hundreds more that you could find.
Mm-hmm. You know, when we first moved in this area, I grew up in Pinellas, and we moved to Hillsborough County, and I remember where Nebraska and Florida Avenue came together, that little apex close to Holmes's Nursery, there was this gigantic avocado tree. And I said, how in the world can that be? I mean, you know, we had a lot of cold weather. I don't think it's there now, but it was really amazing to me. That was the first avocado I think I ever saw in Florida.
And you grew up, went in Largo area?
Largo.
Well, okay. And you knew Coach Haley?
Oh, yeah.
And I tell you, when he used to come to the North Shore School when I was a kid, and if you could beat Coach Haley in chess, you got a free popsicle. And at about 10 years old, I never went more than a day or two without a free popsicle because I learned to develop the pawn to king four and get your knights out there, and I could beat Coach Haley pretty quickly. But he was a great track coach, and I ran for his brother at St. Pete High. Cool. Sure, small world.
So we've got Tom, who I think is in Stuart, Florida. Tom, is that you?
That's me.
Hi, Tom. What's your question?
Yeah, I've got an avocado now that's, four or five years old. And the most fruit I can get off the darn thing is about 12 avocados. Now, I read something last year where a guy said, well, you know, because of the A and B flower situation, what he does is he takes honey and he mixes it a 2 or 3% solution with water and sprays that solution all over the tree when it's blooming. You know, to attract attract more bees. So I tried that, and I got a lot of baby avocados this spring, but they all dropped off except for about 12 again. I don't know what the deal is.
well, you had a sweet tree.
Yeah,
one thing, and there's kind of point counterpoint on doing it, but I sometimes will spray with copper, and I know there's some differences on opinion on that, but copper is a natural, to me, a natural element, and it's a good fungicide, and it's been around for, it's one of the oldest ones, and if I have to use a fungicide, I'd rather use something that's organic-based than something that's been made totally in a test tube. And the copper, I will spray my avocados when they're about the size of a pea to a golf ball. I like to spray them with a copper because they get some anthracnose, they get a fungus that gets on there, and that fungus will cause, you know, if everything isn't right, the fruit will drop. And I'm not sure if you guys, if it fits into your sustainable living idea, but I'm willing to do that on my avocados because 12 avocados doesn't get it and 50 does. But
that's for sure.
So that's my opinion on that, that I would think of spraying with a copper. And as I say, it's the copper's been used as a fungicide since, gosh, probably Roman times. So it's not something brand new. It's been around forever. Copper will stain, so watch out if you've got any walkways and things of that nature. But I've got an old sprayer that's probably 100 years old. It's an old piston pump sprayer, and it does a great job. I can go up 40 feet or so with it. And I will use the copper, and I think you almost have to. If you have a lot of fungus spotting, and avocados get, they're prone to it. They'll get fungus in the leaf, which isn't so bad. You drop some leaves, but fungus in that fruit will cause you to drop that fruit a lot. And so that's an area where I will spray with something, and I think copper has a place. Or I've also used diethane M45, which is a zinc manganese. Yeah. And there again, it's zinc and manganese. To me, you're more on the organic side than, you know, some of the other things that have been totally test tube made.
Sure.
But that's my opine, and you can either take it for what it's worth or not, but I think you'll get a lot more of that fruit to hold.
Well, I'll sure give it a try because, you know, even though these avocados are, you know, pretty big, it's better to have more than a dozen of them.
That's yeah, I would think. Plus, I think adding, I mean, I've been fertilizing more. I mean, the other day I took apple peels and shells, eggshells, and I had some shrimp shells, and I put them around my avocado, and then I mulch over it. And, you know, just increasing the organic matter, I feel like every one of those has more N, P, and K, and it's organic, you know. So sure. Coffee grounds, 0.5% N, P, and K in it. So you're giving it, every little step to me like that is a step in the right direction.
And it's also slow release, too.
Yeah, it's going to be a slow release, and your tree's going to go, they haven't forgotten me. So you don't necessarily have to use a lot of commercial fertilizer, but, you know, there's fertilizer every day that you have around you.
All right, Tom, thanks a lot. Thanks for your question.
Thanks, Rod. See
you. All right. Here's a question from Patricia. She writes, just tuned in, heard about avocados. Can we plant the smaller Haas avocados, the ones with the bumpy skin, can we plant those here in Florida, or are we stuck with the smooth skin variety, the bigger avocados? And the second question is it best to buy an avocado plant, or is planting seed from a delicious avocado the best way to get an avocado tree?
Well, it's fun to grow one, and you'll always have at least a house plant if you do the toothpick routine. And I've seen folks have that, you know, I've seen an avocado, you know, go up the side, down, you know, the wall, and basically be an indoor plant that covers someone's house. I say my dad wasn't really a gardening type, but he had a little bar and wine place in St. Pete where he had an avocado, and he grew the thing, and it grew, must have grown 20 feet in his little bar restaurant to get to the light. And, you know, sidebar story. But yeah, I would say grafted trees are going to give you fruit. If you're really into fruit, either you're going to have to learn how to graft or get someone graft it for you, or break down and raise the pit for fun for a plant, and either learn to graft or go to the nursery and buy a grafted tree. And they're not that expensive. I look at it, I don't drink much, I make my own wine, I don't smoke, so I look at the things I don't do. If I want to buy you know, a $30 avocado tree, I just go, I bite the bullet, even though it's a brow brick man lick neck my neck and I'm Scottish and it's not right, I still do it, and I just, because some of those things you have to do, because you want it.
Well, you know, it's a good investment.
It is.
Yeah, and I tell everybody, assets over liabilities equal net worth. And what is it? You know, and everybody goes, a young man was out at the farm yesterday. He said, well, what is a liability or what is an asset? And I would say, a good, grafted avocado tree is an asset. And
sure
it's obviously an asset for your neighbors.
Yeah, they like me more. And, you know, and I liked them. I go out there and every time I take one in, I go, I could be buying $3 or $4 you at Publix or wherever. And I'm not picking on them, but I like having my own that I can grow it. I think mine tastes better and they're bigger. They're twice the size of a Haas.
Stan, do you have any mango trees?
I don't, but my neighbor does, so I'm waiting for theirs to come on. I've had my glasses out looking at theirs to see when theirs may be ready. I would like to.
Now, the squirrels go after mangoes, too, don't they?
They can, and I have a carambola, a little star fruit. It has vitamin C in it. It's real good. I like it. I like the bananas. I have a thing called strawberry tree. It has little berries that look like blueberries, but they're red. And they taste between butter and strawberry.
Cool.
So that's another, it's something different that that I grow. And it kind of grows, mine got blown over, so my son had to come over, and we actually had to come along the thing back into position. And I called it Lazarus, which I do for any tree that I think looks like it's almost ready to die and should be probably dead. And if you can bring it back to life, you know, it's to me, it's like a touchdown.
Score one for humanity.
Exactly.
Yeah. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. Our email address, dj@wmnf.org. This question from FM writes, have Stan tell us about walking a tree to force blooms. What is going on there? Also, growing grapefruit from seed, is the fruit edible if it's grown from a seed, and how does it taste? So what's he talking about? When Fran says... walking a tree to force blooms.
Maybe some, I've heard people actually beat on trees, you know, to whack them with like a baseball bat. Now, don't get into killing your tree, but I've seen that done before. Farmers in the old days would look at a tree and go, produce for me. And the tree didn't. They'd half run it over with their tractor, or, you know, if a tree's injured, often a tree will want to go into reproduction. And that's the theory behind going out there. I think people sometimes, you know, don't hurt your spouse, don't kick the dog. If you have to beat on something, whack a tree. Much better idea for the world. And there is some theory there. A seedling should produce for you a good fruit. Genetically, it could be different. And I would say it's kind of like your child. Your child won't be exactly you, but the child will be a combination, sometimes better and sometimes not. And that occurs. And the seedlings normally, it's fun to grow a seedling. I raised one of my lemons years ago. My wife had a lemon in my tea. I said, you know, I'll take this home and raise a tree. And she goes, they didn't going to do it. And because she told me I couldn't, I did. And it produced fruit. And
that?
So you can do things like that.
So this question, Fran's question is, can you grow grapefruit from a seed?
Yes, you can.
Absolutely.
And the odds are, now there again, like the avocado, you're probably going to wait 8 or 10 years for a seedling to produce. Mm-hmm. And a seedling tree tends to be more upright. It'll probably be a 40-foot tall tree going straight up eventually. Mm-hmm. And it may not... A grafted tree will usually be more rounded, more like, let's say, looking like a live oak. It's going to be more of a thing. But if you don't care and you just like the idea, and let's say you don't want to pay for a grafted tree, you could raise it from seed.
And no, they might have thorns.
And it probably will have thorns, maybe 2.5-inch thorns. And you'll know a seedling tree from a non-grafted tree for that.
But let's go to
good darning needles.
Let's go to Sherry. Sherry, where are you? Where are you calling from?
Sarasota.
All right. Thanks for calling, Sherry. What's your question?
My question is relating to the avocado tree. I was curious because I thought I heard on one of your shows, Sustainable Living, a couple of years back, I had planted avocado trees from seeds that I had done the 3-prong thing, save them in the window. And I planted them. It took about 6 years, and they did fruit, but they never fruited a lot, like one of your callers said. But I noticed one of my other vining plants took over my avocado tree, and we kept trying to cut it at the root, this vining, it's called a monkey's claw, and we would cut it at the root, and it would still grow back and take over, literally dominate the avocado. And I think I called in about it, and I think I heard on your show that it produced like hundreds of avocados on some of the seeds. I mean, some of the babies fell, but I ended up getting probably bumper crops those years. I think I heard on your show, though, someone, I thought it was the Sustainable Living Show, where they talked about you can sometimes take a nail half the size of the root base and drive it down in it, and then the tree thinks it's being attacked or killed, and then it will produce more as long as you're not, you know, harming your tree. But then so I wanted to leave it there and see if y'all wanted to talk about that, because I've done that, and I've noticed it come out with, like I said, bumper crops in my avocado.
Wow. Well, you know, it was the people, we've had the Florida, what is it, the Tampa Rare Fruit Council, and several shows and several different guests from that. It's, they've either preached, you know, driving nails in it or girdling it. You know, not so much just taking a knife around. And that's what I did to the avocado here to know. It's, it did start blooming, but I didn't say cut it hard enough or something.
But you don't girdle it around the entire trunk, do you?
Yes, you girdle it, but it's a real thin cut. And the tree immediately heals, but that sends that message that, oh, you know, something's going on here. I better put on some fruit. Yeah,
produce.
Well, that's great information. I'm glad you called in about that, because we wondered, does that work?
If you girdled in too deep, you could wind up killing it.
Yes,
so,
I wouldn't.
But the nails.
Right.
She's talking about the nails.
Yeah, and I've heard. I took it over. You know, a vining plant took over it, and it seemed to even produce even stronger.
Yeah, well, I think there's the species reproducing. If you're injured, you want to reproduce, and often the tree will. If it's being overrun by something, it may go, hey, this may be my last hurrah. Let's get a bunch of fruit out there so we can keep the species going. So that's the theory behind that, and as long as you can still find your tree from the vine, I guess it's okay.
Great. Thanks so much.
All right. Thanks, Sherry. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa. We're talking about gardening on the Sustainable Living Program. Stu's in Sarasota. Stan DeFreitas is our guest, along with John Butts and Debbie Butts. And Stu, you're on. What's your question for Stan and Debbie?
Hi. I have a question about my kumquat tree. It's a centennial kumquat. I've had it for about 3 years, but no fruit. Are there male and female to the kumquats? Because I have other kumquats, the Maiwa, I believe, and I've got tons of kumquats.
You should get fruit. It is a grafted tree. You can see where the graft union is.
I got it from a nursery, yes.
So it should be. It's getting full sun.
Yeah, like about 6 to 7 hours a day.
And it's, are you putting any fertilizer around the tree at all?
I've been fertilizing recently. Yes, I have.
Okay. Well, of course, it won't probably do much flowering now until maybe next spring. February, March is usually the time for most citrus to go into their bloom. So I wouldn't expect a bunch now, though I noticed my lime the other day starting to put out a little bit of bloom because lemon and limes do it whenever they want to do it. But I would think your next big time. I mean, I did put a little bit of some organic fertilizer around some of my citrus yesterday. And not so much for what it's going to do right now, but hoping it'll give me more bloom coming up next spring. So what we do now helps then.
But does the kumquat, is that a male and female?
No, you should have both the male and female right there on the same flower. It's not a separate tree. It should have both the, there's a male, you know, the stigma and the anthers, which is the male part, and you should be able to get it on the one tree. Just make sure the bees are buzzing, and you should be a happy camper. That's one of the problems we have. Sometimes we don't see enough of our pollinators, and because we've lost pollinators over the last few years, you know, the tree can bloom all at once, but if it doesn't get pollinated, you're going to have to put on these big 6-foot-long wings and a little paintbrush and go around and hit those flowers and try to self-pollinate.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Stu, thanks a lot. Now, here's a question from Gail. She says, our condo mango gave us 100 fruits last year, more than 100. This year, the blooms fell off in January, and we have no mangoes. Is there anything we should do next year?
Sometimes they're, again, like the avocado. If a fungus gets on there, it can cause those blooms to drop. And therefore, spraying either with copper or diethanium 45 may be good if you're seeing some fungal problems. And of course, mangoes, you also have to worry about cold. If you get we didn't really get much cold last year, but if we get a cold snap right when the blooms are coming, that can be a problem. I don't know of any really great cold-hardy mangoes. There are some cold-hardy avocados, but mangoes are pretty much on the tropical side, so you're going to have to cover it over if we do get that cold spell.
Stan, you mentioned pollinators. How do you attract, as somebody, you know, sprayed honey on their tree, one of our callers did, but how do you attract pollinators to your tree?
Well, by not using a lot of pesticide helps because, you know, sometimes you can kill them, especially there's a lot of worry about some of the nicotoid-based pesticides that are a problem. So if you can cut back on spraying, that helps. And if you have a spray service, maybe, you know, it's a mixed bag there, but that probably will help increasing the organic matter stuff, getting more flowers. You know, I was going to pull out some little weeds I saw the other day, some little daisy weeds, and I saw some bees going to it. And I thought, you know, I should pull this out. But the bees are having a little happy time there, and not that I care so much if they pollinate my weed, but I do like them coming back next time when the avocado's in bloom. So maybe, you know, as you were saying with your idea of not killing every weed in your yard, and or Debbie over here says you can eat a lot of them, which is good too. And first lane, she's right. We probably should be eating more of our weeds, yes, and not using, you know, 10 different herbicides to kill everything off.
Mm-hmm. And there are things called butterfly gardens that,
yes,
IFAS kind of promotes, and promotes, you know, growing your pollinators in your yard,
sure,
which is kind of added beauty, a landscape to your backyard.
Yeah, a lot of these natives are great. If you have more of the flowering plants like that, then, mm-hmm, the bees, they've got to go where they're going to get their next meal. And so that's important.
So France writes, how did your fruit trees survive Hurricane Irma? Are any fruit trees extremely brittle in the wind? And I'm growing Barbados cherry tree. It's a delicious fruit. Also, what trees should I plant for hurricanes around the house? That's France.
Well, you know, I had a tree that got half blown over. I said I had to come along it back into position because the strawberry tree is kind of a gangly tree. It grows off in different positions. It was about 15, 20 feet tall. Maybe not 20, 15 feet tall. But it was enough wind, and it was like a big kite. It just pulled it on over. And so we pulled it back into position. I had to trim it a lot, too. So I had to forego a lot of fruit because otherwise I couldn't have gotten the weight back into position, even with a come along. We had a tractor, and we were doing all kinds of engineering. But I knew my son would be good at that, too, because he's just great at stuff like that. So I knew he would help. He got it in position, and we put a hose around it and put a rope on it to hold it in position. And once it's hardened up, we'll be back in business.
So are there any really brittle trees that grow fruit that we probably should not plant around our houses, just assuming that we're going to get more hurricanes?
I think they lost a lot of the big tropical fruit trees down at Echo and some of these other places. A lot of those that grow real fast and get real big, they're going to go over easier, shallow root systems and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So, and then again, you don't want it right next to the house if it's going to get really big, too.
That's good advice. Yeah, I think that's important to, you know, plan things out a little bit about how close you are to your house and which way does the wind come. Kind of sit down and say, hey, here's my house. You know, where does the north wind come from? Where does the tropical wind come from? Does that oak tree tend to block stuff? I mean,
and where do I want to put those solar panels?
That's something else I'd love to do. I want to put it. I dearly want to put in a metal roof and solar panels and tell a power company, you know, I'll see you later.
Yeah. come buy some of Stan's books. Hurry.
Yeah. I need to sell more books because Stan needs to put up these solar panels, and you can help in that process. Actually, I'm working on a new book on herbs and veggies, too,
cool,
which we haven't. I need to. But half the time I'm out. I'm like the shoemaker's kid. I'm out looking at someone else's yard as opposed to spending time in my own. I don't want to tell you my yard's perfection because that wouldn't be true. But I mean, I'm going to be working for some for the city of St. Pete this week, looking at some stuff when they're putting in some drainage pipes. I'm going to go down and look at the roots. I'm also a certified arborist, so I spend a lot of time on that stuff. I spend time in eminent domain when they put roads through. Mm-hmm. They need to know the value of the trees and shrubs, and I hate to say I make more money doing that than I do planting Mrs. O'Leary's petunia bed. So
Sandy writes this, if I need to get rid of weeds, is there something natural that we can use instead of Roundup?
Well, I've used some soap and ammonia, and you can mix some soap and sudsy ammonia, and you can mix it up a couple of ounces into a gallon of water of both, and spray it, and it's pretty effective. I don't know, it's going to give you, it's, you know, Roundup works because it translocates the glyphosate, goes back and kills from the root back, so it probably is a longer lasting kill. But it's pretty cheap to use some detergent soap and some ammonia. And it will. I've used it on weeds in the walkways and stuff where you want to kill them off, and you can't get much more organic than that.
Cover them up with a tarp.
Covering them up with a tarp. Sometimes I've actually gone out with, I've got hot water I use for my tea in the morning. and I'll take extra hot water, and I'll walk down there and pour a little hot water on a little weed in the wrong place. A weed is just a plant out of place.
That's right.
But, you know, if it's coming in the middle of my driveway or something and I don't like it, it looks bad, then it has to go.
Man, right. We're running out of time. What's your website?
I have Stan DeFritis, of course, AskMrGreenThumb.com. You can go there and you can see some of our past TV segments. We did, our last bunch were with Channel 10. Back when they cared about having ratings. And of course, we won't pick on them. But we are working on some other stuff right now. And Stan DeFritis' complete guide to Florida gardening. We'll give that another shameless plug. But I've enjoyed being in here today. And, I think we've answered some questions. And
had some fun.
Thanks for having me in with you.
All right. Well, Stan DeFritis, thanks a lot. Thanks for coming by WMNF. So, John, we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Yep. Should be back.
Debbie Butts, thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Stay tuned for the NPR News. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM.